when I left Cape Town this morning, it was not raining. And as I came through this area, it was raining. So I remember I went to the Eastern Cape several times. And as I come there, it rains. So they gave me a name. And they said, your name is Zanemvula, the one who comes with the rain. So I can say this name is following me everywhere. But thank you very much, Program Director, Mr. Elekok. Let me also greet our Executive Mayor, Dr. Anneli Rabi, and all members of the Mayoral Committee who are here with us. I've also seen the Deputy Mayor who's present. Greet all of you, ladies and gentlemen, leaders of all political parties who are here with us. I saw Mr. McKenzie earlier, but it seems he's gone. And I was told that Ms. Helen Zille is also here.
Oh, yeah, there.
The corner there. I don't know who else is here. Those who have not seen, all protocol observed. Let me greet also the CEOs and of various companies, all businesses who are here, business leaders, and everybody who is here this morning. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm very pleased to be with you this morning at this Biz News Conference to share my reflection and engage with you on issues of importance as we continue to build the South Africa we want, which truly belongs to all of us who live in it, black and white. We had previously agreed with the organizers that I would come at the opening of this conference. But as you are aware, we postponed the budget on the 19th of February. So the president gave me a task to work with a small team of cabinet ministers to try and finalize the budget with the Minister of Finance. So it was a bit difficult to come here on the 11th. But of course, we did manage to finalize that yesterday. So I'm happy to then join you this morning, as agreed with the organizers that once I'm done with the budget, I will come and then share some thoughts with you. I want to begin by saying that as we embark on this journey of transforming our country, we must have a full appreciation that the first 15 years of our democracy was characterized by high economic growth. And many of you will remember those years. There was a time when our economy was growing at close to 4% and moving towards 6%. But the last few years, the last decade and a half, has been characterized by what many of us refer to as stagnant growth. And hence, we must embark on structural reforms of our economy, which, amongst others, entails ensuring that the growth sectors of the economy should contribute to GDP growth, but as well as creating much-needed jobs. Because there is an argument that at some point, yes, we did have growth, but others characterize it as jobless growth. So Growth, yes, but we need jobs. I must state from the onset that the responsibility of guiding South Africa to greater prosperity is not solely on the shoulders of government. It is a shared responsibility amongst the business community, NGOs, civil society, as well as those who aspire to see our country prosper. At the core of the issue that requires immediate attention is poverty, inequality, unemployment, and corruption. These existential challenges pose a danger to our democratic constitutional system. They keep all of us, and if I may say so for myself, awake at night, because if we do not swiftly overcome these systemic economic issues, we shall experience perpetual unrest in many of our communities. So what I'm saying is that if we fail to integrate most marginalized people into the mainstream economy to help them sustain their livelihoods, we will find ourselves in a difficult position as a country. Equally, we must deal decisively with gross inequality as an integral part of overcoming these challenges. So, I've come to this point, to this important conference, with the knowledge that many of you who are here share the same concerns about the state of the economy as well as the country's future. I trust that you share our conviction that we must work together to find workable solutions. Let me talk a bit. About the GNU. I know many of you like this one. The future of South Africa under the GNU. I had an opportunity last year to do a working visit to the UK and Ireland, and everywhere I arrived, people wanted to know, what is the GNU? And I had to explain. Now, Program Director, yesterday we witnessed the presentation of the budget of the Government of National Unity by the Minister of Finance, which was in response to President Cyril Ramaphosa's priorities as outlined in the State of the Nation Address. You recall that in the State of the Nation Address, the President said a lot of things that we need to do as a country. Now we need to fund those things. Now, the budget was presented, but many of you will recall that on the 19th of February, when the budget was supposed to be postponed, it was postponed. So we then agreed that we will come back after we have looked at the issues that I can refer to as contentious issues. When we sat in the cabinet, there were issues that we thought we need to resolve before we rush to present the budget. And that's why the budget was postponed. But we subsequently reached consensus on a number of these issues and were able then to move ahead yesterday. Now, we have learned a lot of lessons through this process. One of the lessons we have learned is that we can't present a budget the way we used to do all the years. The budget needs to be fully discussed with all partners in the GNU, because you see the Minister of Finance, like all ministers before him, will always treat the budget as confidential. And the reasons is because in the budget there are numbers that are sensitive to the markets. So they'll always treat it as confidential. But we said to the Minister of Finance, we understand that, but take us into confidence well before the time. So the president then said to the minister, brief all the leaders of the GNU, which we did on Monday evening. And then, of course, yesterday morning, the cabinet met. Now, Program Director, I have indicated on several occasions when I speak about what we do as a GNU that we don't agree on everything. And we knew from the beginning that we're not going to agree on everything. There will be times when we view things differently. But what brings us together is our agreement that we must put South Africa first. That's what brings us together. We may differ on different things, but we must put South Africa first. We must put the people first. That's what we agree on. So what transpired in engagement on the budget was real in that context, that there are things that we differed on, but we have to ensure that the country works. So President Ramaphosa and some of the leaders of the GNU set up what they call the clearinghouse mechanism. They have a vision to say, if we don't agree, how can we ensure that we resolve these matters, at least to achieve some level of sufficient consensus? And they set up what is now known as the GNU Clearinghouse Mechanism, which the president has asked me to chair. And I'm in that committee, amongst others, with Ms. Helen Zille and others. And the purpose of that committee is to ensure that if there are contentious issues, the leaders will refer those issues to us, we will engage, and then we'll go back to them and say, we think this is how we should resolve them going forward. We have handled a number of issues so far, and we will continue to do so as and when the leaders of the GNU want us to deal with these issues. There may be also times when other parties also want to bring issues to the clearinghouse, like recently the Good Party did request that we discuss the budget, and we did so. So, Program Director, at the moment, the focus of the GNU is on the immediate task of driving inclusive growth and job creation to reduce poverty, tackle the high cost of living, and build a capable, ethical, and developmental state. For us to reach our objective, the National Development Plan Vision 2030 remains a central pillar to guide our developmental approach, which in turn informs the outcomes to be achieved by the 7th administration. As you would know, we are now a few years away from 2030, which is what the National Development Plans looks at is Vision 2030. We are now closer to the. So it is critical that government, in all its efforts, speed up execution. It's very, very important, because often people complain that government has got a lot of programs, good priorities, but we are slow in execution. So we need to speed up execution of the implementation of these issues that are outlined in the NDP, but also the recently adopted medium-term development plan. Now, this one was adopted by the government of national unity a few weeks ago, and that's where we have pulled together all the issues that requires us to ensure that we bring about change in South Africa. We must also start looking into the future beyond 2030. We must perhaps look into South Africa towards 2055. So we must have a long-term vision. In 2055, it will be the centenary of the Freedom Charter, which had said that this is kind of South Africa that we need to build. Many of those objectives are in our current constitution. As part of looking into the future, the president will announce the convening of the national dialogue sometimes this year, coinciding with the 70th anniversary of the Freedom Charter. Now, I'm not sure exactly when the president is going to do this announcement. The idea was that this dialogue, which must bring everybody together, should be held this year. But there are a lot of activities this year, so the president is still looking at when can we do this, because in November, it will be the summit of the heads of states of the G20. So we'll see if we can't accommodate the national dialogue. But it's a very important platform that will bring all South Africans together to deal with issues that affect us. To the MTDP, the Medium-Term Development Plan, which we adopted recently, our idea is to create a more inclusive country that lives up to the commitments of the GNU. So if you want to know how the GNU want to achieve this better South Africa, you must look at the medium-term development plan. Our goal, amongst others, is to encourage fixed capital investments, industrialization, job creation, and the transformation of people's lives. As a nation, we have a duty to transform South Africa and create a country in which all South Africans, regardless of race, class, or gender, may enjoy a decent quality of life and access to economic opportunities that improve their well-being. One of the primary transformational intentions and policies include the land expropriation policy. Let me talk a little bit about that, because I'm sure there are farmers amongst us who may be concerned about this as well. Now, the president, in dealing with this question, he had a number of things to say, but let me start by saying he did sign this law on the 23rd of January. So he signed the expropriation bill into law. The newly assented Expropriation Act comes 50 years after the implementation of the old 1975 Expropriation Act. So it was an amendment to the already existing act. Now, the 1975 Act, in our view, lacked clear definitions on critical legal terms. We also believe that it neglected to consider socio-economic transformation and did not establish a structural process of fair compensation. The new Act, however, introduces a transparent expropriation framework that balances land reform with legal safeguards. It introduces expropriation without compensation under specific conditions. It strengthens legal protection and clarifies compensation principles. This comes after a lengthy and extensive process by various lead line function departments coordinated at the level of the Interministerial Committee on Land Reform and Agriculture. So what the president did, he set up an interministerial committee. So the Minister of Agriculture, Minister of Land Reform, amongst others, they serve in that committee. But also in that committee, we bring a lot of independent commissions and advisory panels. Now, the law has been carefully crafted to accommodate a diverse range of requirements by considering a variety of demographics and incorporating flexible approaches wherever it is possible to do so. I must emphasize that South Africa is a constitutional democracy that is firmly rooted in the principles of justice, equality, and the rule of law. These principles are important in guiding our efforts to correct historical injustices and seek to redress an unjust past that eroded people's access and rights to land, not just as a commodity, but as an integral part of people's livelihood and identity. The speculations that assess that the signing of the Expropriation Act is responsible for farm murders are not only unfounded, but also irresponsible. The issue has been prevalent within the farming communities in South Africa for years, and victims of the violence are both farmers and farm workers in various degrees. What we have done as government, we have introduced what we call the Rural Safety Plan. And we believe the Rural Safety Plan is a long-term initiative aimed at protecting our farming communities, farmers as well as farm workers alike, so that we can ensure that there is a protection of the farming communities as well as the food security value chain. This means that rather than dismantling this approach, we must step up our efforts to implement this national rural safety strategy to prevent violent crime on farms, working collaboratively with farming organizations and other vital role players. Now, the Minister of Police will be working closely with farmers and farm workers to ensure that this rural safety plan is implemented to ensure the safety of everybody. Now, Program Director, in short, I want to say there will be no land grabs in South Africa. I know people are saying the Expropriation Act is going to allow land grabs. That's not the case. But that's not going to happen. There's going to be a very going to be a proper process that is managed properly to allow that the issue of land redistribution is handled properly. Let me deal with another issue that is pertinent in everybody's mind, and it's our relationship with the United States of America. Now, one of the things that you, most of you will probably be aware of is that there will be a discontinuation of the president's emergency plan for AIDS relief, which we call it PEFA funding. Now, this funding was part of the funding that we were using for HIV, AIDS, TB, and other diseases program. I think if I recall the figures, about 8 billion rand that was coming from the U.S. Now, the new administration in the U.S. Is discontinuing this grant as we speak. You'll recall that this grant was basically started by President George W. Bush in 2003. Now, once discontinued, it means that there will be a lot of challenges in dealing with this issue. However, as South Africa, we have been budgeting for dealing with issues of HIV and AIDS. So the withdrawal of PEFA, whilst it will be a big challenge to us, we will continue to see how we can assist the vulnerable groups in this sector to deal with issues of TB, HIV and AIDS, and so on. So the Minister of Finance is looking at how to rearrange our budget in such a way that we are able as a country to continue to deal with this challenge. Obviously, as I say, we will lose the 8 billion out of the, I think it's 48 billion or so that we use, but we'll continue as South Africa to provide resources there. The second issue is AGOA, that the new administration want to review this. We think that AGOA is very important for businesses in South Africa, but also particularly the farmers. So if it's discontinued, it will affect us negatively. The loss of AGOA benefits, in our view, would have most devastating effect on South African farmers and also agricultural workers, because the AGOA is presently providing support to South Africa's agriculture and manufacturing sectors, which is expected to generate about $21 billion in trade with the United States. So the position we have taken now as the cabinet is that we should engage with the new administration in the U.S. The president was intending to send a team of ministers to go and meet with the new administration to discuss these issues. Because our position is that we should continue to maintain strong bilateral relations with the United States. And most importantly, as a country, we are committed to improving mutually beneficial trade, continue our political and diplomatic relations with the U.S. As we look to the future, we must also consider diversifying our export markets to lessen our reliance on a single trading partner and to limit the kind of perils that we face. So the president said, look, it's okay, we'll send a delegation there, but let's also, you know, look to other markets as well and engage with those. So there will be delegations that will go to China, Russia, India. As we speak today, the president is co-chairing the EU-South Africa summit here in Cape Town to discuss how we strengthen relations with the EU the whole European zone discuss how we can improve trade. And it's good that the European Union itself wanted to come to South Africa to engage with us. And that is happening as we speak today. The third issue, Program Director, is that we must take advantage of inter-Africa trade. Africa is a very big trading market on its own. And as South Africa, we need to be able to engage with countries in the continent, particularly because there is the African Continental Free Trade Area that allows us to trade with other countries in the continent. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we are in a new reality. And our nation, everybody knows, has a wealth of natural resources. Gold being among the most significant minerals, but we have manganese, we have iron ore, and a lot of these critical minerals. It is important that we must not always export our minerals to other countries. We must use them as well to beneficiate in this country, create products here, because we often export these minerals and then we buy finished goods from other countries. Yes, let's export because we are working with other countries, but let's also start beneficiating our own minerals here. Let's bring the skills here. Let's create the jobs here through our critical minerals. That's very important. We estimate that with the plans that we have and removing blockages to economic growth, we should be able to lift economic expansions to more than 3% in the medium term. We know that in the current budget, the fiscal frameworks talks about 1.9% of GDP growth, but in the long term, with all the plans that we are putting in place, we project that we can grow the economy in the medium term to more than 3%. And that will help us so that we reduce borrowing, because we know that debt to GDP is quite high at the moment. We need to reduce borrowing, and you can only do it if you grow the economy. So there are a number of things that we're going to do. One of them is sort out the challenges in Transnet to be able to transport goods to the ports, sort out the ports, sort out the commuter rail, PRASA, and other infrastructure projects. Now, those who are listening to the minister would have heard Minister of Finance that in the medium term, he is putting 1 trillion rand to infrastructure, because it's important that we fix the ports, Transnet, the roads, build new dams, because that's what's going to help the economy to grow. So 1 trillion rand is put by the minister in that direction. This is a very important issue. In fact, one of the debates in the government of national unity was the issue of growth. That yes, it's okay to increase VAT by 0.5% to be able to get some revenue, but it's not sustainable if you don't grow the economy. So we all agree that the 0.5%, if we do all the things we have to do to grow the economy, we will not need it next year. But it means we must implement these decisions. So the president has set up a committee in his office that is going to pull all these ideas immediately together to look at how we can sort out the issues of growth to be able to reach this target of more than 3% growth in the medium term. Let me also indicate, ladies and gentlemen, that one of the issues we are dealing with now is the provision of skills, particularly amongst young people. We've got in the government what we've called the Human Resource Development Council, which is chaired by myself. This council brings together the business sector, the unions, civil society, and government departments, Ministry of Basic Education, Higher Education, and we deal with the issues of the provisions of skills. Because if you want to grow the economy, you can't rely on skills of outsiders. Yes, in the short term, you will need other people to come and help us, but in the long term, we need to build our own capacity. So if you look at the National Development Plan Vision 2030, what of the anchors of it is the Human Resource Development Strategy. And I'm just mention a few of the things that needs to be done is improving early learning and schooling outcomes, improving the employability of youth who are not in employment. Some of them have gone to universities and colleges, but are not in employment. Some are not even in education and training. And then we need to improve the responsiveness of what we call the post-school education and training system and ensure that we address the demand for skills. And lastly, improve governance, leadership, and management of the public service. So those are important things that, amongst others, as we talk about all these big plans, we need to do this to ensure that we have these skills. Ladies and gentlemen, South Africa is committed to combating corruption. The country signed the United Nations Convention Against Corruption in 2003 and ratified it in 2004. As a member state, South Africa has a responsibility to promote and strengthen measures to prevent and combat corruption. Now, this includes facilitating international cooperation and providing technical assistance. Additionally, South Africa should promote integrity, accountability, and the proper management of public affairs and property. This is our conviction that corruption erodes democracy and the rule of law. It poses a threat to business and obstructs the delivery of essential government services that we need. It is for this reason that government is taking decisive steps to expose and punish corrupt activities both in the public sector and the private sector. One of the things I did yesterday before I came here, I had a meeting with the SIU to look at how we can assist them to perform this their responsibility efficiently, including providing them with necessary resources to be able to do their work. This is very important because we can't continue to decry corruption, but we don't put measures in place that are ensuring that we deal with this decisively. One of the things we are doing, we are reforming our institutions to make them stronger and more transparent and to restore a professional and effective public service. South Africa has also enacted the Prevention and Combating of Corrupt Activities Act to combat corruption both in public sector and the private sector. The NPA as well has got an investigating directorate that they have established. Now, this is a very important issue even nationally. And at the moment, as South Africa, we have put in legislation and we are strengthening our ability, amongst others, to prevent money laundering and fraud, to secure our country's removal from the grey listing. You'll recall that a few years ago, we were put on the grey list as South Africa because the Financial Action Task Force was saying that we don't have legislation or laws that they can see that are strong on dealing with this issue of money laundering. There are 20 issues that they wanted us, 22 that they wanted us to deal with. I can tell you, as we speak today, South Africa has already addressed 20 of those issues satisfactorily to the task force. So we're left with only two. But we are taking this matter very seriously, and we are going to ensure that we address all those issues so that South Africa can be removed from the grey list, because we are able to deal with crime, corruption, money laundering, etc., decisively. South Africa's G20 presidency, this is my last part, we will be hosting the G20. The same fact, meetings have already started. There was a meeting of all the governors of the reserve banks and ministers of finance, ministers of foreign affairs. There will be another meeting of ministers of agriculture that's going to take place, civil society. And then in November, it will be the heads of states that will meet. We have decided that we should use the G20 presidency of South Africa to benefit the Global South, and particularly the continent, under the theme Solidarity, Equality, and Sustainability. So this is a very important year for us as South Africa, and I want us to work together to ensure that our presidency of the G20 benefit South Africa. And those are the issues that we will be dealing with. We are quite excited and happy that we will be leading this important body, and we will make sure that we use it to benefit the continent. Program Director, in closing, I wish to emphasize the importance of collaboration across all sectors to tackle future challenges and harness the talents of all South Africans. We must uphold the values of justice, equality, and freedom, guided by vision for an inclusive South Africa. With courage and determination, we can build a stronger, more prosperous South Africa, ensuring that every individual has an equal opportunity to succeed. Our collective effort will pave the way for a better tomorrow. Thank you very much. Baie dankie.
It's a noisy place, this South Africa. Very, very noisy place. And I'm sure, somebody in the audience said, your time is up. Well, that's a first for me. But anyway, you're in the news a lot. How do you manage this? How do you actually deal personally with the noise?
You see, when you are in leadership, you must understand that not everything you do will please everybody. I think the important thing in leadership is be able sometime to listen, because what you think and what you think is correct is not always what other people think is correct. So you need to be able sometime to, you know, take a back seat and listen to what people are saying. And that's our approach, by the way, in the GNU. Sometimes people, when they see us quarreling, they think that the GNU is collapsing. In fact, it's being strengthened because we are listening towards one another, towards each other. So for me, it's, yes, there'll always be issues. South Africa is a very vibrant country. Most of us have views. We've got solutions, and I think we must listen to people, and where possible, accommodate them. We must not think we as the leaders have all the answers to everything. Let's allow people to express their views, because there's wisdom amongst all of us, and it's going to help us. That's really my approach.
Freedom of speech, that's ingrained in our culture as South Africans. Is it, when you hear people saying we must expect that there's going to be trouble in future because freedom of speech is going to be under attack, how do you react to that?
Well, freedom of speech will never be discontinued in South Africa, or will never be ditched, because it is in the constitution. You know, one thing good in South Africa is that we've got a constitution that protects all of us. We adopted it, all of us, and it is that constitution that guides what we do, even as government. There's nothing in government that we do that must move away from the constitution. It's a benchmark, and the freedom of speech is guaranteed. That's why people have the right to protest. Even yesterday with the budget, there were people with their posters coming to protest. It's allowed, and people must speak out, because together we are stronger. So no one must ever worry that at some point in South Africa's freedom of speech will be eroded. That will never happen.
You hard-boiled in the ANC. Hard-boiled. This is your place. But there's lots of discussion about, should you become president in 2027? You're deputy, obviously. You're in the pole position. You're quickly going to dump the reformists. You're going to get together with MK and EFF, and you're going to have a new constitution or a new government and get rid of the constitution, which is MK's intention. How do you view those kind of criticisms?
Well, Alec is putting me in trouble, because I was told that I must not talk about this issue of who will be president. Let me put it this way. Yes, I've heard stories that, you know, I'm more inclined to work with the EFF and MKP. But you see, what many people don't know is that in our effort to set up the current GNU, I'm one of the leaders of the ANC that made sure that we set up the GNU. I'm one of the leaders of the ANC today who has the responsibility to make sure that the GNU works. As you know, I chair the clearinghouse, and in the clearinghouse we have our own fights, and I'm sure Ms. Helen Zille will tell you that. But the idea is to have this engagement because we want to continue to build. There is no intention that, you know, going into the future, there will be a different direction we will take. Many people don't even know that, in fact, before the GNU was set up, we engaged with the EFF, we engaged with MKP. In fact, the present position was that meet all parties. So those who are not in the GNU are those who chose not to come in. And we said to them, the day you choose to come in, let us know, but these are the rules. We've got a statement of intent that we follow. One of them is, firstly, respect for the Constitution. We're all going to work on that basis. Respect for the rule of law, priority, economic growth, which is inclusive growth, deal with issues of poverty, high cost of living, capable state. So the rules are there. So those who come in must play by the rules. We're not going to change the rules that work for South Africa.
Okay, so let's get to some of the questions. Neil De Beer, you know Neil. He says, Mr. Deputy President, there are huge words on fighting corruption every day. And thank you, you covered it again today. How do you and so many who are accused of corruption truly clear your names so we can all trust you?
Thank you very much. In fact, I was at the ANC Integrity Commission and they asked me the same question. You see, when you have allegation in the newspapers, you respond, but sometimes they don't cover your response in the very enthusiastic manner in which they reported their allegations. Very difficult thing. In fact, you are lucky if they cover you at all, because that doesn't make news. But one of the mechanisms, in fact, the Integrity Commission said to me, they want me to develop a paper that we will take to the NEC to deal with these questions. And what I did is to write to Parliament. So in Parliament, we've got what we call the Ethics Committee. You write to Parliament and say, there are these allegations. This is my response to them. And Parliament then decides. So we're encouraging all MPs, ministers, to do the same. When the allegations, your first port of call is Parliament. You can deal with issues in your party, but Parliament is more important, the Ethics Committee. If the Ethics Committee says, we've heard you, but you are in the wrong, then you are in the wrong. So it's important to go to the Ethics Committee. And in my case, that's what I do. When there are allegations, go to Parliament and explain and put the facts on the table.
Why are there these allegations? What is driving it from your perspective? Because it must be making life more difficult at a time when we need to have economic growth as the prime focus.
Yes, you know, leaders can't assume that at all times they will not be attacked. For whatever reasons. If it's not corruptions, sometimes they'll say, well, you are a weak leader, or you are a new liberal, you are a radical. There'll always be attacks on leaders. The ability of leadership is to focus on what is good for the country, what is good for the people. Focus on the work. That's what I do. I don't focus on side issues. I focus on what needs to be done. In this country at the moment, what needs to be done is to fix the economy. Get the economy working, get people into jobs, sort out Transnet, Prasa, the roads. And let's get South Africa to work. Let's focus.
Well, certainly Eskom is on the right direction. Transnet, I guess, it's still work in progress. But what about Gauteng? You are always brought into the discussions on Gauteng. Alex Mafia, blah, blah, blah. Give us your side.
Well, I grew up in Alex, and in 1982, I was at Alexander High School, where we started the Congress of South African Students. But in 1983, I became the president of the Alexander Youth Congress. And the people who are referred to as Alex Mafia in the main are people I worked with in the Alexander Youth Congress. Many of them, I went with them to prison. We came back. And we are the group that actually built Gauteng. As you know, I was an MEC in Gauteng of 5 departments during the 15 years I spent there. I became the premier, became the chairman of the ANC after being secretary for 7 years. So it's my territory. There'll never be talk about Gauteng without mentioning my name, because that's where I cut my political leadership. I built Gauteng with a lot of other comrades. So when things go wrong, I'm likely to feature. When things go right, I'm likely to feature. But I must say that when I was a leader of Gauteng until I left, Gauteng's economy was growing very well. We are one of the leading economies in the continent. There was a time then we were number 3 from, you know, Egypt and other countries. Of course, we have taken a knock now, but I don't blame those who are leading today, because there was also COVID-19 and other challenges. But the current leadership is now reviving Gauteng. We're supporting them, because Gauteng is an engine of the South African economy. If Gauteng sneezes, South Africa catches cold, because more than 40% of GDP comes from there. So we have to get it right, and we will get it right.
And why is there no GNU done in Gauteng?
In Gauteng, there were no agreements between the DA and the ANC. We decided as national leadership, we're not going to force them. We said, engage. If you get an agreement, well and good. But they came back to us and said, look, there is no agreement, so we're going for a minority government. We are still encouraging them that if they can find one another, because the DA and ANC are the biggest party in Gauteng, so if they find one another, they can have a GNU. But they couldn't find one another, as we did nationally.
What did the ANC learn from the May 2024 election?
For me, 2 important lessons. One is that we are now in an era where you are unlikely, going to be very difficult to have one party winning everything. So it's quite clear that we're in a different era now. People have different choices. They want to try other parties. So we have learned that we must learn to work with one another. We must learn to compromise. And that's what we're going to do going forward. We still want, as the ANC, you know, to be a leading party. It's very good to have more than 50%. But the reality is that may not happen. So what do you do? You must work with others. And when you work with others, you must learn to compromise. You can't say, no, my way or the highway. You must learn to compromise. And that's a big lesson to all politicians, that in South Africa, politicians must learn to work with one another, to compromise. And that's what we do in the GNU. Nobody gets everything that they want. But the last thing that we have learned a lot is that really the priority must be the people. It is the people who vote for us. If they don't vote for one party alone to lead, it means they want us to work together.
That's a big lesson.
Yeah, that's a big lesson for us.
Mr. Deputy President, there are a number of questions here about Iran. And we know you said in your talk that you are wanting to engage with the United States. And you know for Donald Trump, you just mentioned Iran and it's a huge red flag. What is the relationship between the ANC and Iran, financially in particular?
Well, at the moment, there is no financial relationship for the ANC with Iran. Historically, yes, there was. In the early years, you will know that leaders of the ANC went to Iran. We had a good relationship with them and support for the ANC. But at the moment, we don't have, because remember, we have also a strong relationship with the U.S., and there are countries where the U.S. have imposed sanctions. So we can't have double standards and go and say we are strengthening our trade with the U.S., but we'll also do things where the U.S. have imposed sanctions. So the ANC doesn't take money from Iran, because Iran is under sanctions. But historically, yes, they've always supported the ANC.
So the obvious follow-up question to that was, the ANC was in trouble financially, and then suddenly it had lots of money. What you were the Treasury General, yeah, at a period of time? I don't think at that time. What happened there? Where did the money come from?
Well, I was a Treasurer General from 2017, and I can tell you this because it's a public knowledge. When I reported at conference in 2022, I'd raised about 2.4 billion rand for the ANC. Where did the money come from? South African businesses. That's where the money came from. I was even under trouble because people were saying, why do you take money from people who are doing business with government? And I said, well, as long as I don't give them tenders, it's not a problem. So I don't go to South African businesses and say, support the ANC, I'll give you a tender. Don't do that. And the current Treasurer General doesn't do that either. So the majority of our funding came from South African businesses. And of course, during that time when as TG, we didn't have the law that prohibit foreign funding. So there were other countries like the UAE and Saudi Arabia and Qatar and others who also donated money to the ANC, which we used for our election campaign. But then South Africa adopted a law of political parties not taking foreign funding, so we stopped. We are now focusing on getting money from our members, South African businesses, and we don't take any money from any foreign country as we speak.
So the discussion of the ANC bankrupt, suddenly it's got money, it can pay off all its debts, then it goes to the ICJ and attacks Israel. Are you telling us those are not dots to be joined?
Well, we don't have a lot of money, actually. We are struggling. So last year, in 2023, I was no longer the TG. But a year before that, there are things that I had done to bring more money to the ANC before I left. And one of the things was to sell ANC assets abroad. You know that the ANC spent a lot of years in exile, so we have a lot of assets overseas in Africa. So I got the officials to agree that I sell a lot of those assets, and they brought a lot of money after we sold them and were able to get additional funding. But we also get funding from the state. There's a Political Funding Act, and the ANC as a majority get more money than all other parties because that's how it works proportionally. But I must say, Alec, that we're not out of the woods. So I can't sit here and say, no, the ANC is fine. Now we have lots of money. No, it's not the case. But we try not to be bankrupt. Because once we become bankrupt, then we're no longer a political party. So that we're not going to allow. But we play by the rules. Everything we do to raise money must be within the laws of South Africa. That's what guides us all the time.
If I follow through what you were saying earlier, we are now into an era of coalitions. Helen Ziller said 2 days ago that it's really now started because Bella and NHI and EWC were from the sixth administration. In other words, when the ANC had over 50%. How is it going to change the lives of South Africans that you've now in a coalition? In the past, the ANC would have thought, well, we know best for the country, obviously. How is it going to change the lives of South Africans by working together? Because clearly, voters want you to, and we've had that message.
I think it will change the life of South Africans if we get our priorities right. It's no good that we as political parties must fight for the interests of our parties. We must fight for the interests of South Africans. At the moment, we know what is the biggest cry in South Africa is that South Africans want jobs. In order for them to get jobs, it means the economy must create jobs. For the economy to create jobs, it means there are a number of things that must be fixed in the economy to create jobs. And we agree on that as a GNU. We agree that is the priority. If you look at the documents of the GNU, you'll see number one is to build an inclusive, growing economy that creates jobs. We have agreed. Secondly, South Africans are facing the high cost of living, and we must do everything to ensure that we cushion that. That's why the Minister of Finance was very careful. If you listen to him yesterday, people were saying, why didn't you increase personal income tax, corporate tax? And he said, look, people are already heavily taxed at those levels. Corporates are heavily taxed. We want them to create jobs. So I'm not going to touch that for now, which is a big issue. But he was very clear that we need to see how we can cushion. When he increased VAT, others said, well, but you are putting the burden on the poor. And he said, look, I'm going to do everything to try and cushion them too by increasing goods that are zero rated, increasing grants for old age pensioners by 130 rands, putting more money in education, in health, to be able to sort out the challenges that we have with our hospitals, clinics, etc. So it was a difficult balancing act. But at the end, it says, I'm putting more money on the economic development. In fact, if you look at the budget now, those of you who study the budget carefully will see that the fastest growing item in the budget over the MTF is actually economic development with up to 1 trillion rand. Because we have to get the economy right. We have to create jobs and therefore create a better life for South Africans.
Mr. Mashatile, thank you for coming to us today, coming all the way from in this weather. I think it's isn't it supposed to be good news when you bring the rain? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you to the audience.
Right now, you can get the cheapest Forex rate around, right here, on Shift. Pay less for your dollars, pounds, and euros here, and get to shop more here, and do more here, and enjoy more ooh-la-la here. Shift also lets you trade and transfer currencies, and buy shares in the world's best companies. It all happens right here, on Shift. You won't find a cheaper Forex rate anywhere else, no matter where you bank. Download the Shift app today.
In the world of business banking, projections, numbers, and your bottom line can often triumph over relationships. At Investec, we value both. That's why we understand that running a successful business takes endurance, drive, and partners who are willing to walk the journey with you. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking. Out of the ordinary.
Downings is South Africa's leading marquee infrastructure company, proudly celebrating 25 years of excellence. Renowned for creativity, innovation, and unmatched technical expertise, our event marquees and semi-permanent structures elevate any project with style and sophistication. Whether it's a corporate event or a commercial project, we tailor every structure to meet your needs with world-class precision. Visit downings.co.za to consult with our expert team. Downings, your trusted marquee specialists nationwide.